This is Cave Scott Allen of OTCode.com.
This is Kevin Dente.
This is John Galloway.
This is Scott Kuhn from LazyCoder.com.
This is part two of a two-part podcast on presentation patterns with Jeremy Miller, Ward Bell, Rob Eisenberg, Glenn Block, and the rest of the Herding Code gang. If you haven't heard part one, it's not completely required to understand this podcast, but it's probably a good idea. And our loyal listeners will expect me to remind you that this podcast is brought to you by Ant's Memory Profiler 5. It offers clear presentation of the profiling results so you can find your memory leak within minutes. And now, on with the show.
The one challenge I'm having here is stepping outside of myself. You know, all of us on this call have a relative understanding of these different patterns. And I think the challenge really is, you know, people got to get the job done. And how do they get them? You know, what's the glide path to get them into the mode where they can say, ah, you know, I don't think a lot of this stuff is intuitive. It's intuitive to us as we learn the patterns. But getting to that point, and what is, I mean, I'm kind of like thinking, okay, so what am I hearing here? I'm hearing that we all need to build our own frameworks that are very specific to our apps. But not everybody's in the position to know where to start to do that. So I guess one question would be where to start. And I know that was one of the things we tried to do with PMP. Like, we didn't want necessarily, although it's even become that with Cal, that Cal was going to be the end all. We did minimize what we did there so that if it was, it wasn't super heavyweight. But, of course, there's a lot of people that have just taken it, and it becomes like the de facto, and they start using it, and we start advising people on it. But what is the way to get kind of more of the mainstream type development community to, you know, make that jump? I'm not seeing it. I'm seeing that there's a bunch of really bright people that can do this the, quote, right way, and every company can't hire those guys.
No, I think that there ought to be some people who lay down some examples and give some people some infrastructure to play with. I think that the resistance is to declaring it as the infrastructure or branding it necessarily. That's where the resistance comes from, at least for me.
I'll tell you what made the difference for me, and this is props to Jeremy, but back when we had the first Prism meeting, I had already started working on Calibrum, but I didn't have any of these notions in there. At that point, I was mainly working on solving some other issues I had with WPF, but I spent about 5 minutes just looking over Jeremy's shoulder at some of his storyteller code. And after just 5 minutes of looking at how he was solving some of these problems in a real app, a bunch of things sort of fell into place in my mind. So I'm not really sure what is the way to convey this to the masses, so to speak, but I know that personally, once I sat down with somebody who had been there and done that, saw how they solved the real problems and saw just for a few minutes even what the code looked like, a lot of things started to make sense. So I think we definitely need some even more reference apps out there and a lot more articles and blogs just showing real stuff.
I think when we're talking about, you know, reaching out to people who haven't been exposed to any of this or the beginners or however you want to characterize these people, I think we need to go way, way back. I think most of the patterns and discussions we've been having tonight are relatively advanced patterns. I think you have to go back all the way to the beginning and first start with convincing developers that you want to break things up. You don't want to put all your code in one giant bag of code or God forbid, you want to put everything in one giant bag of loose SAML. Start to encourage developers to just think that maybe you want to pull behavior away from display. Maybe you want to pull screen wiring away from the raw XAML markup. Maybe you want to pull screen navigation away from the individual screens. You got to first convince developers not to pile up spaghetti code first, I guess. And once you turn the page and start thinking, you know, as a developer, once you start thinking instead of, oh my God, how can I make this work and compile? Once you start thinking about where should this code go, that's the place where a developer turns the corner and starts to become much better. That's the only time when it's, I think it's really useful for developers to start learning about patterns.
Well, now you've really dropped the gloves and have taken a good hefty swing at some of the tendencies that we're starting to see in both Silverlight and WPF with XAMLized navigation and domain data sources and all that kind of stuff. And the tendency to start loading up the XAML with behaviors that I'm not sure really belong there. So maybe we should see how many people are excited about that one.
So I'll speak on that
one.
Huh?
Violent rejection.
Okay, so I'll say it. I'm not going to say what Jeremy said, but I will say that, you know, and this is not necessarily the view of my employer, but several people that work there. You know, I think XAML is good for some things. I think it gets abused for a lot of things. I think things like attached behaviors, for example, are really cool in that they give designer empowerment. But the thing that I think about is how as a developer, because I'm the one who's on the line for delivering this application, do I actually know that things work? I can't put a breakpoint in my XAML. Yeah, I can put a breakpoint in the source code for my attached behavior, but I don't want to debug my applications built on the .NET framework by having to open the framework source. That's not like a happy place to be. So I think that, you know, there are things that XAML does that are extremely powerful in terms of rendering templates, these kind of things. But at least where we are today from a tooling and development experience and a validation experience of being able to say, yeah, I can trust that this XAML actually meets my requirements, I am very hesitant of, you know, overloading XAML with stuff. And I think this convention-based approaches, like what the Fluent Silverlight guys are doing, and Jeff Hanley and I were even working on conventions in XAML where, you know, I drop a button and that button name is save. And as a result, it knows to automatically wire up to a save action on the view model. I think these things are super powerful, but again, it's a, you know, there's a culture that likes those things, like Ruby on Rails type folks, and there's a culture that really doesn't. And we're kind of, I think we're at this point where, you know, there's this big kind of tug of war between these two approaches. But personally, I think XAML has its place, but it should not be abused and is often getting abused.
XAML should be seen and not heard.
Well, I think we have to get at the forces that are trying to drive to grow it and find out why they're doing it. I mean, they talk a lot about how they're trying to support the designer, and that's great. I mean, that's what Blend is good for, you know, drawing things out. But what are we doing? I mean, designers aren't good at writing code. They have no notion of what clean code looks like. So what are we doing by trying to enrich that side of XAML? I don't get it, but this is too big a topic to cover here. We ought to find some way, though, to try and get the voices who favor that direction to try and convince us.
So not only do they not understand code, but they don't understand Blend. Most of the designers that I've gotten any kind of feedback from when they've looked at Blend have you know, said, well, basically it's not Photoshop. It doesn't do what I need it to do. And I'm coming at this from the web side of things. But every time I've gotten a mock-up, it's basically been a PSD file. Designers treat developers as compilers. We're either compiling PSDs into HTML and CSS or into whatever WinForm, WebForm, whatever else, you know, that they want the app to finally end up in. I mean, when I first saw XAML, I kind of made a joke and I posted a picture of a XAML keyboard that was just two angle brackets and a return key was basically it. I think it had a slash too. And so I've never seen it. It looks so dense and so circular. And especially when compared to HTML, which is, you know, also can get very dense and circular, but it's understood. And when I've worked on Witty in the past, I've fallen back to programming XAML as a basically like a WinForms app, simply because I couldn't figure out how exactly to get all of the tags to line up. And some of the people that were working on that project too were, you know, WPF, at least if not experts, extremely knowledgeable about it. It seems like the epitome of tag soup to me in a lot of ways. I keep wanting to style things. I keep wanting to, you know, in the back end, set up some kind of a, you know, like a jQuery for WPF or for Silverlight that would let me just, you know, grab that element and do things with it. And I just don't see how to do it. But I'm also not convinced, at least personally, that Silverlight is going to ever go anywhere. But hey, you know, that's me. So what do you guys, so we kind of heard from Glenn about what the pain points of XAML are specifically. So can we make the distinction between XAML and the markup and WPF, the technology? Is there a way to do WPF without invoking XAML in any way? Could you just do it all programmatically? I often draw parallels to Interface Builder on OS X and the fact that this kind of serialization format for UIs was done by Interface Builder a long time ago, and it's really done a lot better, in my opinion. I've almost never, in fact, I don't think any time I've ever played around with Interface Builder, I've never opened up a NIP file and had to tweak it or play with it or write it. And I've talked to lots of experienced Mac developers, and I don't mean, you know, guys who bought a MacBook Pro when it turned Intel. I mean people who used to work for Next Step, and they've almost never had to open up a NIB file and manipulate things. So as an object serialization kind of idea, it I think it works a lot better than XAML, because I've almost never been able to use the tooling. I've always had to open it up in some kind of text editor and work that way. So what do you guys think about a XAML-less WPF or Silverlight? Would that, you know, make sense?
I think it would make sense. I don't know if we're going to get there anytime soon, unfortunately. I'm in XAML a lot of the time. I feel pretty comfortable with it. It was one of those things that I loved at first, but once I swallowed it down and it's got to my stomach, it's turned bitter.
Have you ever been able to use any tool? Or has it always been just in the basically the text editor portion?
I exclusively use the text editor. I'm pretty comfortable with XAML, so it doesn't. I'm actually pretty fast with it, so it doesn't bother me too much. But for me, the biggest problems with XAML. Well, a big problem with XAML is when you're dealing with data bindings, it's extremely error prone, especially if you are typing it by hand. And it's both a XAML problem and a platform problem, because there's the typing of the XAML by hand that causes the errors. But when you run the app, WPF, its behavior is to swallow data binding errors. So you could have incorrect bindings all throughout your app and never know it until you literally say, look in the database and say, okay, why is this data not actually finding its place here? And then you've got to sort of follow the path through your architecture till you finally end up at your UI and realize that you spelled first name wrong, something like that. And so there's issues in the platform and there's issues in the XAML. When it comes to doing bindings in code, yeah, you can do it, but barely. The API is extremely obtuse. And no beginner is ever going to do it that way. Intermediate, I suppose, skill levels will do it when they have to, but it's certainly not an API that encourages doing things that way. That's one of the cool things about the Fluent Silverlight is that they actually threw an API on top of that and made something that makes sense and that was relatively easy to use. And I'd like to see a lot more of that stuff. Unfortunately, there's this war between the designers and the developers here around this issue, because then that takes even more away from the designers who want to be able to say, I want this data to go here and so on and so forth. But of course, that could be solved with a convention-based approach.
Or teach them the code. No, I'm not entirely kidding. So a couple of issues. Could you do some WPF work without doing XAML? If you talk about the layout, the programmatic API for the WPF objects, raw out of the box, is awful and completely unusable. It's not meant to be used by hand. It's very push button. That's okay. You can build some Fluent Interface type stuff. You can build some extension methods that will make it go a lot faster. You can use a lot of conventions. Like they were saying, you can use microcontrollers. There's solutions you can do on top of things that do make it possible. Before, I've had a, for line of business type forms, had a Fluent Interface that would allow you to very rapidly build forms on the fly and do the data bindings as you go. As far as the data bindings, and Glenn's going to go after me, and I'm going to put a lot of stress on him here. Something that I did in the past that I really liked how this turned out, I actually completely ditched data binding completely and had a Fluent Interface in the code behind using expressions to define how screen elements were bound to a presentation model. And along the way, you could also express little bits and pieces of behavior, you know, like this lookup field is filled by this. Remember the last value on this field, very declarative stuff. But by having 100% IntelliSense and shrinking down the binding into one small place in the code behind, we thought it made it very fast to both write the code and then to later to scan and understand what was going on. I think somebody started to go down this path. I know somebody talked about jQuery. I think the WPF XAML world really needs to take a hard look at the state of the art in HTML and understand the unobtrusive JavaScript idea. The idea that HTML or XAML is nothing but an expression of the structure of the layout. All styling is done somewhere else, and all behavior is done off to the side in another area of the code base in a very small, compact form. I think that's going to give us a lot better productivity, easier maintainability, and might actually solve the designer-developer split rather than spitting behavior intermixed in the same XAML file that your designer's trying to hose over and blend.
Okay, so the first thing I'm going to do is give some love to WPF and Silverlight. I think the power, and when you talk about like swapping your own data binding, it kind of misses the entire story of the value of Silverlight and WPF, which is, you know, some of the concepts sound similar to WinForms, but it is entirely different. It is a rendering engine. And I think that is really where its biggest power is, that it's a rendering engine, template-driven, dynamic templates that, you know, render and then bind to data on the fly. Now, I know you and I have had a bunch of discussions about the data binding mechanism, you being Jeremy, but I think there's a tremendous power. And that separation actually is there because you can create styles and you can create templates, which are kind of the equivalent of CSS. Where I think the problem is, and maybe part of this is just like as people use this real world, because it's still this designer-developer relationship is developing, or developer-developing is building, is that, you know, the dust will settle. And hopefully when the dust settles, we'll see what are the good uses of XAML, because I think it does have some extremely good uses. And what are the places where, although you can do it, it opens up a big can of worms? And maybe we need to block that. I mean, I think, and this is just me speaking here. Now, I do know that as far as being able to do things in code, I, for one, am a big fan of the fact that if you're in an environment where there's no designer, there's not going to be a designer, then yes, you should have a code-based API to be able to do things like data binding. It's centralized. Maybe even have our tooling learn that when a designer defines bindings, that actually still puts code in a nice place where somebody can look at it. Because I think the one big problem we haven't talked about that happens in XAML that you kind of touched on it, Jeremy, with the centralization issue is, you know, the single source of, you know, the scattering problem, that those bindings get scattered all over the place. And it also means that it's very brittle because in changing the bindings, you're changing them in the same place where layout and all this other stuff is, you might break it. So I think there's a separation that definitely needs to go on in XAML. And I think we need to have the ability to do static binding through code. And that's something, an area that I've been personally having a tirade on internally, though not making a ton of progress, but some. But anyway, I think we can, you know, we need to look at XAML and say, you know, WPF brings some and Silverlight brings some really valuable things to the table. But there are some things we need to be careful of, and we need to define those parameters. And probably Microsoft needs to help in that and see how they can build tools, or we can build tools, that guide people down a successful path.
Just to go back into the office tomorrow and explain to all the people who make tools for Microsoft for us that I never want to touch the mouse if I don't have to. I think if you can get that across to them, I think everything changes.
One of the things that I miss most moving back and forth from HTML and CSS and JavaScript over into XAML is the simple selectors that, you know, that I can have a selector, the same type of selectors in both jQuery and CSS. And then it's simple to say, okay, I want every third item in this table row to blah, blah, blah. And I know you can retemplate, and I know that there's a huge API for that kind of stuff in WPF, but it's not simple. Whereas, I mean, you can throw something up on Stack Overflow for a jQuery question, and it's answered in 30 seconds by, you know, 45 different people. So I do think that's one place that I miss moving into the XAML world.
Well, I'm going to jump in here because I've been imagining what a jQuery for XAML would look like. I'm going to be doing a blog post on it, sketching out some theses about how that should feel. Because the one thing I don't want to do is end up with a brand new syntax. I mean, I want to use things like link, and I want it to be possible for you to write the actions in languages that you know. But I do now see, and I'm clearly others of you are seeing, the need to be able to programmatically process whatever is coming out there in XAML. And so I'm going to sort of launch something in my blog, and then we can all pile on.
Right. I guess I'll jump in on that one. I think the jQuery idea is a great one. And one of the interesting things coming out right now, which is in the Silverlight toolkit, is the reactive FX stuff. I just sat with Matt Podwasaki the other day and I was looking at it, and it's basically taking link and putting it into a push model. And what that allows you to do, which is similar kind of the way jQuery works, is, you know, you could conceptually, from what I've seen, you could write something in ReactiveFX that would go and parse the XAML tree. And then you would have queries, link queries that say, oh, when you find this, here's the action I want you to execute, which might be updating a property, it might be inserting an element, a whole bunch of things that are really interesting. Now, again, I haven't thought heavily about it, but your jQuery idea inspired me to give ReactiveFX a plug for those who might be thinking about it.
Well, yeah, I'm really looking forward to doing it, because I see it also as a way of ripping crap out that the designer dropped in there in order to support himself. And I envision you being able to write actions that whip through that stuff and say, I don't care what you said for a binding there. This is what binding looks like to me. And being able to plug in your own convention mechanism so that you can just, you know, read the X name is and decide what you mean and all that stuff. So I'm looking forward to kind of laying that out. And then, since all of you guys are so interested, hoping you'll all pile in. Yeah, I think we need something that brings on back home, because we went a long way from MVVM.
I'm not sure we went that far, though. Because the stuff we're talking about is really about how to remove those behaviors, which there's the tendency now. I mean, there's a whole bunch of people that are coming to MVVM, at least from an attraction perspective, because they believe it supports the designer workflow. And I think the stuff you're saying about a jQuery-like equivalent means you could still have a way of doing these behaviors, but doing it in a way where it's not wound up in the XAML.
Well, and the other thing that I'm trying to do is get back. I mean, one of the ways you get into this is the whole argument about whether there should be any code behind. And I think that this can finesse the whole thing. If you do this right, then the people who want zero code behind have their way. And those of us who don't want to see any code in the XAML itself, but want to be able to have code work the XAML over, are going to have their way. So maybe we can get out of this bind that we're in.
Do you know why people are pushing so hard for the zero code behind? Is it because the way it was so abused in WinForms world, or I've never quite gotten this at all?
I think there are a number of forces. Certainly, tooling is one form of it, and any code that's not in the XAML, you know, anything that's not in the XAML is hard to tool, and they're all worried that you're going to have something in the code behind that makes the tooling fall apart. And I think that can be addressed. Another is that there is a lot of power in data templates. And by their nature, they have no code behind. And so if you want to be able, and it's very powerful to be able to say, geez, based on whatever this thing is that I'm throwing, you know, that's appearing here, I'm going to marry it up with some data template that has XAML on it. I got to make sure that data template has enough power to do the things it needs to do. So they're worried about that. And then, of course, there's this, I don't know if of course is the right thing. There's the Oslo front, which we've heard from somewhere. I guess it was the last place I saw it was Rocky Laka's blog. Somehow Oslo implies zero code behind. I don't know why that would be so. But in any event, there are these forces that I think they're at work, and maybe we can finesse it with a jQuery-ish way out.
I think another reason that people are pushing for this no code behind thing is because in their mind it's sort of a simple way to achieve separation of concerns. In their mind, if I pulled all the code out of my code behind, I'm now doing separated presentation. I've factored my code correctly. But I think if anything what we've discovered in this conversation is that even if you pull all that code out of the code behind, you still have a half dozen other responsibilities that all need to be factored and need to work out. So I think there's an aspect of people knowing that they need to do this separation of concerns thing, which is easy to understand conceptually, but sometimes extremely difficult when you get down to it and you're actually working with a piece of code. And I think for a lot of people, the simple understanding is, well, I'll just eliminate the code behind, and now I've done a good job of my architecture.
The problem, I think, is you're cutting off your nose to spite your face. Because the belief is, if I get rid of the code, things are going to be more maintainable. When in actuality, having the code in a place where I can, you know, I can have better unit testing, it gives more control to the view model. And the one I keep using, and it's just like the new canonical scenario. And I just did a blog post recently, which I know a lot of you guys weighed in on, is the, you know, is the whole around the whole zero code thing is an animation, right? Like I've got some kind of animation that needs to get kicked off in response to something in the view model. Now, one approach is to say, well, when I click the button, then I have some kind of attached behavior that the button automatically knows in XAML to start up this kind of animation. But then at some point, I'm going to need to stop that. So how do I do that? And how do I, and that animation showing, which might be showing a progress bar or a screen, it's not just prettiness of the UI. It's almost like a requirement of my application that when it goes to save data, the user needs to see something. And I want to at least have some level of validation on that. And at least if I have like a method in the view that's the guy who's triggering that, I can put a breakpoint, I can at least see the flow, and I can have the view model still driving the control that when the save action gets called, he does that. I know, Rob, you have stuff to weigh in on because you've done a bunch of stuff, I think, that goes a bit into the more of the declarative way of handling that. But my general feeling is you kind of lose something by making it all declarative. You lose that validation and that debuggability.
Glenn, I just wanted to say that any notion that you're improving the separation of concerns by enriching the coding that goes in XAML is absolutely upside down. The only point of XAML should be, and the only point of the tooling should be, make me pretty. That's all the view should be about, is make me pretty. And that's why we were bringing in the turtlenecks to do it. And then every time it gets away from make me pretty, it's a mistake.
Yeah, I agree 100% with both of you guys on that. I think it's easy. You know, it's funny because Microsoft does a lot of these demos and they say look no code, and people don't draw the connection that what's no code has been shoved into the XAML. And so you know, it's one of those things that we have to stay on top of and bring before people's eyes. That just because it's not in the code behind, you've moved this now into the XAML, you've actually created a much worse problem than if you just left it in the code behind to begin with. So as far, you know, the animation story is really interesting, and I can't like give an answer for myself 100% one way or the other on that, because although I'd say 99% of the time it should definitely be left in the view, unless for some reason there's something that's so business critical that the view model really needs to take over that more explicitly. And you know, there's some very creative things you can do to make that declarative and to still be able to do that without having dependency issues, I guess, between your views and your view models, or at least without getting a situation where you've got to do some ridiculous mocking to test stuff. But I think that belongs in the view, and except for in exceptional situations.
Well, it belongs in the view unless there's the slightest bit of business logic in it whatsoever. Or if there's any logic that you want to test, pull it out, and maybe not even into a controller, but what I even kind of call an embedded controller, a little controller that lives inside the view. I think some of this, the no XAML or no code behind versus a little code behind, may come into play just of how did people come into this pattern. I think a lot of the people who have suddenly gotten into MVVM in the last year or two, maybe coming into it because of the developer-designer split. For me, that goes back much, much farther when it was really strictly about testability at first, pulling as much behavior out as possible into supervisor controllers and passive view to make things easier to test, which also led to, I want to put the screen behavior off into this other piece of the code where it's easy to scan and look at without having to scroll through dozens of event handlers and nasty, ugly code in the view. for the things that you do leave in the view, to me, the view is still almost 100% untestable. You can do some things. I think WPF is actually harder to do automated testing against than WinForms was. So anything that you do leave in the view, any kind of behavior, needs to be extremely declarative, very simple, and simple enough that I can pretty well scan it by eye and know if it works. Like, I don't even want to see view code passing parameters to a view model or a presenter. I want it simply either binding properties or exposing properties. So there's not even, you can't even mess up the view by not passing parameters correctly.
If that Hallelujah. Makes sense. Plus one from me.
Well, and the point that I made about starting the animation and Rob, you said, oh, that should be in the view. It is in the view. It's in the code behind it. I mean, we've got to get to the point of realizing that whether it's code behind or not, it's still the view, right? When we were doing MVP before WPF came along, we basically had logic in the view that had to delegate back and forth. Now, most of that logic has gone away. But when it comes to a point of saying, ooh, I'll put this thing declaratively in XAML in a place where it could break versus I'll revert back to what I used to do with MVP and create some kind of hook, or maybe I'll use event aggregator, whatever the case may be. But this way, I have a place that I can go in the code to trace what the heck is going on. Even better, if the animation gets removed, that code won't compile because it's referencing the animation or the storyboard. There's no violation of concerns because it is in the view, just not in markup.
There's also the issue that, I mean, just doing a straight comparison of XAML versus what is possible with C#. XAML is big. It's not even remotely terse. It's verbose. It's loud. It's noisy. You can take steps. Think about something like animation. You can create a little DSL or fluent interface in C# to basically express a state machine. I think you could express it much more concisely in C# than you ever could with XAML. And I think that's something you have to take into account.
My only rejoinder to that is that when you're trying to figure out what an animation looks like, it's a bare, you know, if you had a DSL and you're trying to sit there and put the parameters in it saying go here or construct the spline there, you have no idea what you're talking about. That's where the tooling really excels. I'm ready to let them have that one.
My argument here is, though, that a good readable DSL should actually make that simpler. And to some degree, I may be splitting us off into the WF argument, where a state machine DSL in C#, I think, blows the doors off of WF XAML. I don't see why the same thing shouldn't be true with even animation and WPF. XAML is loud.
I think it really depends on, I mean, that DSL would have to be so rich to be able to do all the things. And I think I agree completely with Ward. I mean, you just have to see the kind of XAML people are able to spit out with the tools. Some of it, you may say, well, the tools are doing things they shouldn't do. But I really am skeptical. I think you could do some limited stuff like move this box from here to here. But the kind of things, I mean, the designers are taking advantage of what WPF was really built to support, maybe over-optimized on, and that the tools allow them to leverage. And I really don't feel like you would get the kind of experience that people are used to delivering now if you moved it completely to a DSL. But even whether you move it to a DSL, and I could be wrong, but that's just my feeling. But whether you move it to a DSL or not, that doesn't impact whether or not the triggering of that thing and the referencing of that thing is in code, even if the actual animation and storyboard itself is designed in XAML.
Well, if there's any logic whatsoever around when the animation is supposed to start or stop, I want that under a unit test.
And absolutely. That's exactly
absolutely. I think we're all agreed exactly. There.
I don't know if we are all agreed. I want to hear Rob's opinion on that because I know.
No. We're not disagreeing in that at all. I think I was not clear in what I was saying. I'm 100% agreed with you guys on that. Yeah.
Cool.
And furthermore, I'm never going to test an animation. I don't, as a developer of this thing, I don't really care whether it spins left or it spins right. That's somebody else's job. And moreover, I'm not any good at that. So, you know, I'm ready to let the designer have that stuff. Let them have it. I don't want a DSL for animation. It's not going to save me any time or make my application development any better.
Hey, Ward. Splitting off on a tangent, I think that's your argument for when you want supervising controller or even passive view as opposed to view model. This kind of scenario where you want a piece of logic telling the view what to do. I think that would be easier to follow if you're looking at a supervising controller making direct calls to some kind of iView.
Yeah, but you're doing a hybrid, right? You kind of end up with where in this single view, there's a set of concerns that I'm all handling through data binding, et cetera. And then there's this one or two
not
sets
necessarily.
Of things.
Not necessarily. What you're really, you're saying the view knows how to do the animation, but what you're really worried about is the proper time to tell the view to do the animation or stop the animation or change the animation.
Yep.
And this is where I like supervisor controller better than trying to data bind and do observer synchronization with the presentation model.
Right. No, but
I didn't want the view model to know a thing about animation or whether there's an animation or not. I don't want it telling it to do an animation. All I want it to do is say.
No. This is the win. If you have logic that if you have real business logic or behavioral logic, that is when the animation is supposed to start.
Right, like I'm saving on saving. Right, that's the canonical scenario I use. I'm saving, and at the time of saving, something's going to need to happen. So my view model should have absolutely no knowledge of what's going to happen, or even that it is an animation. I agree with Ward. It should not care. What it cares
about...
Well,
maybe you don't. You know, the presentation model is something it's a state machine kind of thing, and that's what it's best for. But when you're talking about directing a view to do things, I like the supervising controller model better.
Go ahead.
I wouldn't be using presentation model at all in this exact scenario.
But you're talking about not using it for just that particular action. Like, would you say split that off then into a separate view? I mean, are you kind of thinking of this as a composite view? Because let's say I've got an order for...
Remember, so the whole presenter to view doesn't have to be a one-to-one ratio. You can easily have a presentation model that the view is bound to for the screen state and fine grain state machine stuff. That's what presentation model is really good for. But I could be using supervising controller, a totally separate class, also driving the view, probably through a different interface, but doing different sets of interactions.
Sure.
That's a perfectly valid thing to do. I do not, this is a side argument that Ward and I had off and on lately. I do not believe that the MVVM pattern should be the only pattern that the .NET community is going to use now. I don't think it's the best choice in every scenario.
Oh, that's one of the reasons why in the Stock Trader RI, for example, we actually had supervising controllers and presentation models, because I completely agree with you. I mean, there's not one pattern that suits all. There may be a pattern that basically addresses a large set of concerns. But I just wanted to push on what you were saying was not mutually exclusive, and this was more for people that are listening. You were saying, okay, I could have an order screen that has a view model, but there could also be a supervising controller there. And that when that action needs to happen, like that save or whatever, at that point, the supervising controller jumps in and does what it needs to do. And the view model still handles the things that it needs to handle. Is that right?
Sure. Except in some cases, I think you would actually have supervising controller only. I don't think you automatically have a view model every time. I think our community is making a mistake by standardizing so hard on MVVM. Even though it's awesome that the Microsoft mainstream is finally doing separated presentation of any kind for the first time ever. So, it's half good to me, I guess is what I'm saying.
Nah, I want one hammer and hit everything on the head with it.
I can say, this is an area that I actually really struggled with. And I think, Jeremy, you've looked at Calibron, and when you see that iPresenter interface, it's implemented in several different places. And what I found is that I really did have this sort of blended approach. And so, some things were more view model-ish. Some things were more supervising controller-ish. And I found that, when looking at specific instances of how I designed certain parts of the app, there was, there were the extremes and there was everything in between, depending on the scenario. And I really struggled to find a language to describe that. So for me personally, this topic right now is actually something that I've struggled with quite a bit, just figuring out how to describe those things and how to communicate that to other people. But I do think that it's great that the community is interested in model view model, but it's a drone now. It's the only thing that we're hearing. And there are, for every problem, there is a unique solution, and, So
So in terms of the book, the approach I'm hoping to take, I'm a huge fan of responsibility-driven design, the old Rebecca Wirth Brock stuff that never gets enough attention. So in this whole decision of do I go presentation model, MVVM, passive view, or supervisor controller, I want to talk about all of the various responsibilities that you have in the screen. You know, maintaining the state that the screen is supposed to be in. That's presentation model responsibility. Or there's a responsibility for being an intermediary to the rest of the application, or deciding when the rest of the application has raised an event that makes the screen switch to a different mode. To me, that kind of mediator is a perfect, it's a responsibility that I think of as a supervisor controller having. And even once in a while, if I have a very simple dialogue with only a couple text boxes, but it still has some significant behavioral elements to it, I actually still reach for passive view occasionally.
I think what we're hitting on here is there's a tendency in this industry where we want to make things silver bullets. And one thing that John Gossman, who's an architect for Blend and now for WPF, somebody I respect deeply, has said and said back at the when we were in PMP at the Prism, you know, the customer meeting, was, you know, slavery is freedom. And I think there's a lot of people believe that slavery is freedom, and that, you know, and reality wise, I think we live in an industry where it's not black and white. There's lots of gray. And, you know, folks are saying things like, well, if I do it with view model, it might not be optimal, but it's so much better than what I did before. And I think there's some validity to that. But I think we do have to understand that, you know, with complexity and, you know, there is complexity. People are afraid of complexity, and people do gravitate towards wanting a single solution. And it's not just in patterns. It's in lots of other things. And being cognizant of that, you know, I think there's a challenge here of an education, of getting, you know, people to look at things in a way that, hey, this is not the one-all solution. You know, this is appropriate in these scenarios, and this other one is appropriate in these scenarios.
Well, and something people should also realize is, just like in the old days when you learn TDD for the first time and, you know, assert dot R equal 2 plus 2 is supposed to equal 4, and then you hit the real world and it's harder, you're going to hit screens that are really, really big and complicated, and you can't follow a strict model, view model separation. You're going to want to have multiple view models. You are probably going to want to split out different supervising controller classes to handle certain aspects of the screen. It's the same kind of thing I was saying much earlier. You cannot allow big blobby bits of code. You need to segregate the responsibilities of the screen. And a screen can easily have lots of different responsibilities.
One of the things, Jeremy, I think could be really valuable in your book, and you may be intending this, is to think about the different kinds of application models that are out there and really, you know, define like the canonical app models that you're aware of. And when you talk about the different patterns, talk about them in context of those models.
So right now I'm thinking, and this is partially driven by feedback from Ward. We're going to talk about the tabbed MDI model. We're going to talk about the web navigation style, especially now that you guys are saying that's relatively common. I actually got a lot of great material from tonight about the dashboard kind of view, that composite kind of view where you have a lot of different panes in the application that you may be drilling into and out of and navigating just within a pane. So those are the three application motifs I'm thinking of. Plus, after feedback from you, I think I'm going to talk about the Eclipse-style perspectives.
Just to plug a product real quick. Jeremy, have you taken a look at Inhibernate Profiler? Have you looked at that app?
As far as using it, yes. As far as the code structure, no.
How would you classify that user interface?
Gosh, I haven't looked at that closely enough. Rob, I was mostly concerned with, can we use it?
I didn't know if you could picture it, you know.
No, Chad did that for us, but boy, that made a huge amount of difference to our Inhibernate performance when we used it, though.
I'd love to have you take a look at the UI and see what category you would see that fitting into, if you have a category that fits in.
Well, you know what? I'll ask Iandy if he'll let me look at the code.
The UI, so I'll talk to him about it.
Okay.
Jeremy, cool. What's your plan from like a code samples perspective within the book? How are you planning to approach that?
Do you mean in languages or environments or?
Both languages and your approach. Like, are you going to have any like overarching scenarios? It's just a sidebar, but I think.
I hope to. I hope to have a couple small. Well, I'm pulling a lot of examples out of Storyteller. Not coincidentally. The Storyteller application is a project in its own right, but there are a lot of things in the Storyteller application that are fancier than they need to be just so I could play with patterns and sample code. So there'll be a lot of C-sharp examples. I need to build a few other small examples to show completely different patterns. One way or another, I'll have some Java patterns, and I'll actually have some JavaScript patterns. It's not a technology book. It's a patterns book. I'm going to try to keep as much of the weird WPF idioms and the weird Coco idioms out of there as much as possible. Ruby's probably a little too far afield. Coco is a definite.
You know, I kind of feel this. I have like a, and I'm a number of us do, because we keep talking to Jeremy about this, and we really want this book to come out. So aside from like really putting the screws to Jeremy to make sure he puts it out, one of the things is that he started a wiki, and the listeners may want to know about that. And I think that they might want to know, Jeremy, maybe you can talk about it, about how people should communicate their thoughts to you so that they don't drown you, but they somehow you get the benefit of the fact that there are a number of people out here who have a lot of interest in this and they would like to contribute their thoughts.
Okay, so watch my blog at oneofthecodebetter.com blogs, and it'll be a link on the page here. I'm going to announce the wiki in the next week or so. It's live right now. I'm just trying to put a lot more content on it before I bother anybody else with it. And after that, I just simply want you to email me directly. JeremyDMiller@yahoo.com with anything you have with it. I'm kind of using Fowler as my role model for writing the book, and Fowler's crazy. He'll take emails from anybody who writes into him, and he collects all that information and gleans a lot of stuff out of it. So I'm going to try to do the same thing. I want to cast the net as widely as possible. So if you have questions or comments, go ahead and flood me, and I'll try to respond to the best that I can. The wiki, it's screw turn. You should be able to leave comments on the wiki pages without editing the actual content. We'll see how that one works, though.
Hey, you know, we bypassed the whole is it presentation model or MVVM.
Everyone knows the truth.
I've took a line on that one on my blog. If you go read my post about MVVM, it's not about counting code. I've kind of given my perspective on that, which I won't raise now.
TLDR.
I'm totally going back and forth on what I'm going to call it in the book. I think I'm probably going to use both names.
They've confused the issue by introducing a slash now. So you always have to say, PM/MVVM.
Yeah, the problem I don't really like is MVVM is including so much other stuff now. And it's becoming kind of weird WPF idiom. And I really want to talk about how when you have a big screen that you could have multiple presentation models and still have a supervising controller in the same screen object graph. And
I think you can, but MVVM really is, I believe, really is a WPF Silverlight idiom. I think the reason why, I think the reason why the term exists is to say, and I just talked with John Gossman about this today, we had coffee, is that, it's implying a very specific set of actors which do actually relate to a technology, whereas PM is completely agnostic.
Yeah.
Practical purposes, it's the same thing.
But we screwed up because view model is so overloaded, because we use that in MVC tech, web MVC stuff to talk about the model that comes out of the controller and goes to the view. So we just even made it even worse.
Okay, well, I think this is the second goodbye, the second one down right. attempt.
I'm off. Hey, thanks for having us on, guys. That was fun. Thanks for all the help.
And thanks, everybody, for joining. This was awesome.
All right, guys. Thanks so much. It was a great discussion. I learned a ton. I hope other people did, too. And we'll talk to you next week on Herding Code.